Hey, Charlotte Talks fans. You listen to the show, so you know that 287G is a big issue in the race for sheriff. This week on the FAQ City podcast, host Nick Della Canal answers your questions about the controversial program and what your vote means in the May primary. Find the latest episode of FAQ City on iTunes, NPR One, and on WFAE.org/FAQ City, where you can pose your question to the FAQ City podcast.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Late this year, and after years of construction and controversy, the toll lanes on I-77 North will open. It is a $647 million project geared to improving traffic flow, but since 2015 has caused increased congestion as the interstate has been under construction to get ready for the lanes. There have been times when a commute between Charlotte and Mooresville that normally takes about 35 minutes has instead kept drivers in their cars for 2 hours. When the lanes open, one in each direction, the belief is that those who wish to pay the tolls will shorten their drive by using free-flowing toll lanes, and that will relieve congestion in the adjoining free lanes. Now, part of the controversy surrounding the project stems from the fact that the toll lanes will be operated by a private Spanish company and their subsidiary, I-77 Mobility Partners, which has been granted an operating contract for 50 years. It won't be the first toll road project in the state. Toll lanes near Raleigh have been up and running for about 5 years, and construction is planned for yet another. This hour, we're going to get an update on our toll lanes, hear about the Wake County projects, and about the Peach Pass system of tolls in Atlanta, and how that has impacted traffic there for better or worse. We're joined by WFAE's David Borax, who has been following the story in Charlotte since the beginning and who was personally impacted by this because he lives up in that area. Welcome back to the program.
Hello, Mike. 1 hour to get here this morning from Davidson.
My condolences. You could do it by phone. I should mention that we tried to get somebody from the State Department of Transportation to join us this morning, but they couldn't make anyone available, citing scheduling conflict. So, as I said, David, work on the I-77 toll lanes has been underway since 2015. Is the project on schedule to open later this year, and do we have an opening date yet?
Well, we don't have an exact opening date, but the last time I talked with I-77 Mobility Partners, they said everything is on track for the end of the year. And if you look out there on the roadways, it's a little hard to believe that, but looks like they've got a lot of work left to do, especially around Uptown Charlotte with some of the bridges and all of that. But they assure me we're going to be open by the end of the year.
And so people know, who've just moved here or haven't been paying much attention because they never take I-77, the toll lanes will begin and end where?
Right around the Brookshire Freeway, I-277 in Charlotte. They will be from there all the way up to Mooresville, exit 36. So if you are somebody who drives north on 77, you come up 77, you'll have an opportunity right around Uptown to slide into one of these lanes. If you're coming on 277, they're actually building new bridges from that onto I-77 that will go directly into the toll lanes.
So aside from those bridges, can you get in and out of the toll lane at will?
Not at will. There are prescribed entry and exit points for getting in and out of the toll lanes, and they're spaced out over the 26 miles. This has been one of the many things that have been controversial about the project is where these go. It should be possible for most people to get into the toll lanes wherever they want to, you know, in time to get into the lanes to get where they're going.
So let's talk about the controversy. How much of the controversy has been simply opposition to the idea of toll lanes, because this is new to us in North Carolina for the most part? How much has to do with the fact that this was handled by the state with very little time for citizen input, and the fact that the contract was awarded for 50 years to this company called Cintra and their subsidiary, I-77 Mobility Partners?
All of the above. You know, when this was first proposed years ago, there were some public meetings about it, and the idea of tolls was what first got people's ire up about this, and there's lots of opposition for that reason. Another thing that people are looking at is the length of that contract and the fact that it's with a private company. This is the first project of its kind in North Carolina where we've gone to an outside party to build and operate toll lanes like this, and there's a lot of people who question that. And then there are people who've gone through the contract with a fine-tooth comb and have found all kinds of things they don't like about it. And maybe we can talk about some of those at some point. Yeah. But I think there are those who would say, I'm not against toll lanes, but I don't like this contract. So I think it's all over the lot here.
In the many conversations that we've had this from people who were pushing the toll lanes and those who were against the toll lanes, I have to tell you that the people who were against the toll lanes seem to really know more about the project than the people who are in favor of it, which is odd to me. But in all of those conversations, it became clear that the project was being pushed very heavily, almost to the point where it didn't make much sense. Why were people so eager for this project and the way they were pitching this project to go through?
Why were people eager for it? You know, going back to 2011, 2012, as we were planning this project, I think there were a couple of things happening. One was that the state did not and still does not have enough money to expand and improve all of the roads across the state. It's because of a lot of reasons. One of them is our cars are more fuel efficient now, so we're not spending as much money on gasoline, and gasoline taxes are going down. The state budget itself is you know being trimmed back in lots of areas, and I think those are the two main reasons. And so we don't have the money. The idea, the argument by the DOT at that time was, look, there's not enough money to do this project right away. Furthermore, when we rank all of the projects in the state, the I-77 project ranks pretty low right now.
Why? That's the largest city in the state. Why do we have the worst roads?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, it goes back to historically how roads were funded in North Carolina. It used to be much more of a political process than it is now. And it used to be that it was easy for those with political clout to get roads. But then we changed to a system a few years ago that it's called the Strategic Transportation Improvements Program, and they rank the projects. And the way that the criteria for the rankings are such that the I-77 project does not rank as high as it would need to be to get done immediately. And that kind of gets under the skin of people from Lake Norman who commute to Charlotte every day, who look at that blocked up road. I mean, you mentioned earlier that the construction has cause problems with the commute every morning. It's actually not the construction. It's the natural amount of traffic that we have from that area north of Charlotte that has grown so much in recent years.
So if the state is short on cash because our cars get better mileage and they're not making as much money on the gasoline tax, and I guess they don't want to raise, and I'm not advocating they raise the gasoline tax for crying out loud, but they don't want to do that. So if that's the case, why didn't the state simply build the road and collect the tolls and keep the money for themselves? Why farm it out?
Well, this is part of a trend around the country. There are construction companies like Cintra that have developed expertise in this, and the idea is that, you know, they're more experienced with it than the state would be. The state has never done this. Well, there were tolls back in the old days on I-95, but that's another story. But the other reason is that this is not just a management construction and management contract, but in these days of limited state road funding, private companies bring money to the table. So this company, Cintra, that we're talking about, has actually financed the majority of the cost of this road.
So they're paying for the building of it.
They're paying
for all that work out there.
They're paying for it in a few ways. They're putting a couple hundred million in themselves. They've got a federal loan. And then they have sold bonds to investors. So those are three ways that they finance it. They're on the hook for those private investments, by the way.
And they will get 100% of the toll money, or will the state get a piece of the action?
They get the toll money to pay off the bondholders.
For 50 years.
At some point, if there's extra money, the state gets money back.
So what happens after the 50 years?
The state will have to decide, do we renew this contract or do we take over the road? How do we want to use it? I mean, I hate to think about what traffic from Lake Norman to Charlotte will be in 50 years. It's obviously going to be way worse than it is today. And that gets to the idea of what these toll lanes really are. This is not first and foremost about relieving congestion, although, as you mentioned, when they open, they will probably take some cars out of the main lanes. But, you know, back in, I think, 2012, I went to a presentation by an expert that was brought in by the DOT, and he said, this is not about congestion. This is about guaranteeing a reliable ride to and from work every day. And, you know, that's part of the contract here. The company has to make sure that the speed in those toll lanes remains at least 45 miles an hour, which doesn't sound that good, but it's better than what we have right now. So this is really, it's a different kind of a transportation facility. It's not a lane on the highway. It's something else like a train line or an express bus line or something that gets you there faster.
So in the course of the many programs that we've done on this show, we've had some reporters on from other parts of the country where Sintra has operated or operates these toll lanes, and their track record is less than stellar. Let me put it that way.
They've had some bankruptcies.
Yeah.
And it's also true that most of these projects don't end up being owned by or run by the companies that started them.
Wow. But so why are we so gung-ho on this company, this project, with no backing away from this?
Well, I wouldn't say they're not backing away. They are looking at it. Remember, this was an issue in the last gubernatorial election.
May have cost Governor McCrory the election.
Exactly. The votes in the Lake Norman area clearly swayed towards Governor Cooper, which is interesting because it's a heavily Republican area. But there was such animus towards the toll lanes that it did sway the vote.
Well, let's talk about that, because when Pat McCrory was in the governor's mansion, he said it was too late to back out of this deal. We were committed to it, and we're going forward, and that's how it is. And now Governor Cooper has kind of reversed course a little bit. What has he had to say about this?
Well, you know, Cooper, I think he understands that he owes a political debt, perhaps to those folks in the Lake Norman area, to at least take a look at that. And so one of the first things he did was to have the Transportation Department, or actually the Turnpike Authority, hire an outside consultant to review this. And that review is wrapping up. The final meeting for that is actually this coming Monday. So they're looking at the contract in detail and trying to figure out, is there anything we can do here? How do we get out of it if we want to? And the governor has said that, you know, he expects to make a decision by the end of this year about whether we tweak the contract or end it, that sort of thing. And those options are many. We can talk about those if you want.
The fight over this, if that's what you want to call it, it has revealed a difference of opinion, let's put it that way, between the city of Charlotte and other areas of northern Mecklenburg County, because the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization supported these lanes primarily because, correct me if I'm wrong, because of Charlotte's participation in that. The northern part of the county, they're not too sure about this and never have been.
Right. Charlotte has the largest number of votes. It's a weighted vote on the CRTPO.
So why does Charlotte like the idea, and Huntersville, Davidson, et cetera, they're kind of cool on it?
Well, you know, this is an idea that is probably going to continue to come to the Charlotte area in other ways. I mean, there are other toll projects on the books. Well, there's the Monroe Expressway, which opens up later this year. There's also plans for toll lanes on Independence Boulevard, I-77 south of Uptown, and I-485 in South Charlotte. And I think what the transportation planners are looking at here is that there's a limited amount of space to widen these roads, and that at some point down the road, we have to come up with a way to keep at least some traffic flowing on these roads. And, you know, that also gets into the other idea, which is we're growing so fast here, and we build everywhere, and we create these problems without solving the transportation. We create these new projects for housing and development without solving the transportation problem. So I think that's what's coming. And the people in the Lake Norman area, they're the first ones that are going to have to use these in the Lake Norman, coming from Lake Norman to Charlotte. They're first up. They don't like it. Mm.
Ralph emails, one day we will be looking back on the I-77 toll project and will either be celebrating the visionaries who made it happen or cursing the people responsible for what turned out to be a fiasco. Who are the people who got the project through the face of massive public opposition? Who are the people that did that?
Well, the massive public opposition has come later in the process, as you alluded to earlier. And in this report by this consultant, Mercator, one of the key points they made in their summary of the project history is that there clearly appears to have been inadequate public engagement on this project.
So I think Was that deliberate?
That's a good question, and I can't get inside the heads of the transportation planners who did this, but all I can say is that it's totally accurate. I mean, the opposition is high.
David Borax is with WFAE News. We have two reporters standing by, one in Raleigh, one in Atlanta, because they both have toll projects that have been going on for years in both cases, and we'll find out as we go through the program what the impact of those roads has been and what the reaction before, during, and after by the public has been when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the I-77 toll lanes, which will open, one presumes, later this year, or certainly before the end of the year. David Borax from WFAE News has been following all of this. We're going to be talking shortly to two other reporters in Raleigh and in Atlanta who have things to say about those roads up there and what their folks up there had to say about them before, during, and after they started. Are there any options to getting out of this? Because last summer, Widen I-77, which is an organization opposed to the construction of the toll lanes here, urged Lake Norman residents to email legislators in their support of complete and delete. That is a plan, I guess, that would finish construction that's already underway, but buy out the project's contract and revert the toll lanes to general purpose lanes. What has been the result of that effort?
Well, so I mentioned a minute ago this study by this company, Mercator, looking at some options for how to tweak this. And some of those options include maybe letting trucks into the toll lanes, which they're not being built to handle that, so that's a problem. Maybe reducing the three-person – you can go in the toll lanes for free if you have three people in your car. They're talking about reducing that to two. There's another idea about maybe letting frequent users get some kind of a discount to these tolls, which could be, you know, $9 to $11 one way every day. So, but the one that and the initial pass that Mercator took at this, those were the options. At the request and hounding of folks who are opposed to the toll lanes, they've added this one: let's just cancel the contract and take it over. And that's what you're referring to as complete and delete. Now, there are some problems with that, but we've got some new numbers on how much that might cost, and that's the sticking point here. In these meetings, they've said that they're looking at an estimated fair market value for this project, which would be the cost the state might have to pay to buy out Cintra. And it ranges between $392 million and $623 million. And that's a massive amount of money, and it's something that the state does not have that in its back pocket
right
now.
And these numbers keep fluctuating, because earlier, I think when we did the show last time, the cost was estimated to be between $50 million and $800 million.
Right. So I mean, and there's more to it here.
Why?
So at the most recent meeting, the leader of the anti-toll group Widen I-77, Kurt Noss, got up and did his own analysis of the numbers, and he says, and again, there's been no formal appraisal here, so these are all estimates by everybody using their own criteria. But Kurt Noss's suggestion is that since no projects like this are making as much money as Cintra says they're going to make on this project, that it's worth zero. And so he suggests the fair market value is zero. There's still the problem of the federal loan that the company is taking out. The federal loan will have to be paid back. That's $289 million. So he's suggesting that we start somewhere lower at, you know, maybe that number, and you know, the bondholders will probably be out here. That's on top of all of this.
They've been converting HOV lanes into these toll lanes, and the HOV lanes allowed you to use them if you had two people in your car. If you go and you build a toll lane and you spend all that money on it and you allow two or even three people to ride in the toll lane free, how do you make money?
They are betting on the fact that some of us will want to pay that fee in order to get to work in 25 minutes instead of 60 minutes.
Is that a wise bet? I mean, after all this money's been spent, is that a wise bet? Is that perhaps why they have trouble in other areas?
So I think there are people that will use them. And, you know, it might be a person who's got a special occasion where they really need to get somewhere fast. The question is how many people will use them. And so the company's estimates about how much money it will make over the life of the contract are based on estimates that are kind of rosy, and then the estimates that the investors looked at maybe are a little lower. They're not quite as optimistic as Cintra is. I mean, I think that, you know, in other places it has happened that not as many people use these as is expected.
So Kurt Noss, who is probably the leading opponent of this and has been from the start and is probably among the most educated people about this, says that this contract puts a 50-year straitjacket on Lake Norman. What does that mean?
He means a couple of things. One is that this is the solution that they're giving us for the next 50 years to solve to that problem of traffic.
Because they're not going to widen I-77.
That's right, but it goes beyond that, because this contract is it's a business deal, and that company, Cintra, wants a guarantee that they're not going to be impacted, that the profits that they're expecting or the revenues that they're expecting from this project won't be affected. And so that says to the NCDOT, if you do anything that would affect our ability to get revenue from this, you have to compensate us. So, for example, there's talk about the Red Line commuter rail to Lake Norman. If that were to go through, that could be considered to be what's called a revenue impacting event. And there might be some discussions with Cintra about whether we owe them money for putting something on there that's going to take cars off the road.
Wow. All right. The I-77 toll lanes aren't the only ones going in, as you alluded to a moment ago. Among them, the 20-mile Monroe Expressway in Union County. I think that's begun construction. Why do we hear so little about that project? I've heard nothing pro or con, or even that it's coming.
Well, that project is slated to be completed later this year, maybe in the late fall. So there will be people paying tolls on
that.
But
have people been upset by it? Have they?
There has not been the same public outcry that we've seen in the Lake Norman area. Businesses like it, and many people like it. What it's going to do, you got to remember what that is replacing or what it's helping out with is it's U.S. 74 down through Monroe. If you've ever driven down that stretch southeast of Charlotte, it's jam-packed every day from morning till night. This will take a lot of traffic on that. It's a bypass around Monroe, as the name suggests. And so that will help. And it also, you know, business people down there are on board with it because they say that'll help them move their, vehicles and products around Monroe much faster than they were. So it's also being operated by the state. So that issue that we talked about before about the private company, that is not something that's stuck in people's craw in the Union County area.
So the I-77 project, as I understand it, they're going to guarantee that the speed on the toll lanes will it be at least 45 miles per hour at all times. How can they guarantee that if everybody on the road suddenly says, okay, I'll pay the toll?
So that's how the tolls work here. We're going to describe that. It's called dynamic tolling, and that means the tolls change. They rise and fall given based on the amount of traffic. And so if traffic in those toll lanes gets up and the speeds go down, the price of the toll goes up. So we're seeing this in some other cities where they have this now where tolls can really escalate. I mentioned before an early estimate, it's probably not accurate, but $9 to $11 one way if you went the whole length of the route, you know. And it could be much higher than that. We could see tolls $20 one way.
I got to tell you, that sounds exorbitant to me.
And the question
sounds like, it sounds like thievery.
And the question will be, is there anybody that wants to pay it? So the company is going to have to balance just how high that toll rate gets with having some traffic paying the fee.
So while we're awaiting the opening of the toll lanes on I-77, Raleigh drivers have been using toll lanes for years on the Triangle Expressway in western Wake County. Another toll road, NC-540, will someday span southern Wake County. And we wanted to hear about Raleigh's experience, so we invited Richard Stradling, a transportation reporter with the Raleigh News and Observer, to join us. Welcome to the program, Richard. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Atlanta also uses toll roads, and given their notorious traffic problems, we were curious to know if these roads have eased congestion and whether they were controversial at the outset. David Wickard is a transportation reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he also joins us now. Thank you for being here, too.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Richard, let me start with you. The toll lanes along the Triangle Expressway opened in 2011, that's 7 years ago. Was there any significant opposition to toll lanes in general or these lanes in particular before the project began?
Well, one difference is this is actually a toll road, so it's more analogous to the Monroe Expressway. So rather than adding lanes to an existing road, this was a six-lane expressway that was built as a toll road. It runs from the Research Triangle Park down through the suburbs of western Wake County. And the people were not real excited about the road being a toll road. It's actually an extension of, it's the western leg of a loop that will go all the way around Raleigh when it's finished. And the northern part of the loop is free. But the local officials were told by the state that putting tolls on this road would get it built 15 years earlier. And there was a lot of support for getting the road built. So people kind of, shrugged their shoulders and said, well, if we have to do it this way, we will. And so it opened, the first leg opened in late 2011. The rest of it, the rest of the 17-mile stretch of it, it opened later in 2012.
So David Worker, pretty much the same question. Atlanta, obviously known for having terrible traffic, how did citizens view the coming of toll lanes? Because you do have this toll lane project on one of your roads, and how do they view that coming to their city, to their area?
Yeah, we got our first toll lanes on Interstate 85 northeast of the city in 2011. And as you can imagine, there was a very visceral reaction against them. I was at a public meeting where hundreds of people were upset. They were shouting. One gentleman was escorted out by a police officer. Over time, though, I wouldn't say the opposition has necessarily gone away, but you don't see that visceral reaction. People have gotten used to them. People are using them. Last January, we opened our second stretch of toll roads on I-75 south of Atlanta. And again, you know, a lot of people aren't happy with them, but a lot of people are using them as well.
Hmm. What has been the impact of having these toll options for those either who use them or for those who don't use them, who choose to stay on the free pavements part of the road? Has it improved traffic flow? Has it shortened commutes?
Well, yeah, I've got some interesting information on the I-75 lanes that opened last year. You know, these are reversible lanes. There were two lanes that go into town in the morning, and they reverse and go out of town in the evening. About 9,000 to 7,000 vehicles a day use them. Now, just for perspective, about 159,000 vehicles use that stretch of highway every day. So it's a fraction of the people using them. But it's the same setup as it sounds like you're getting there on I-77. The guarantee is 45 miles an hour or more. In terms of the impact, according to the Georgia Department of Transportation, in that first year, if you're in the lane, you're going 10 to 15 miles per hour faster on average in those toll lanes than you are in the regular lanes in the morning. In the evening, it's even bigger disparity. You're going about 20 miles per hour faster. Hmm. Now, in terms of the impact, if you're stuck in the existing lane, it's hardly noticeable. According to the Department of Transportation, traffic in those lanes went about 1 mile per hour faster on average than they had the previous time a year ago before the lanes opened. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but if you look at metro-wide in Atlanta, traffic on the highways actually slowed about 2 to 3 miles per hour over the course of the year. So it's a difference between going 1 mile per hour faster or going 2 to 3 miles per hour slower.
So, Richard, is the same true along the Triangle Expressway? Are people using it? Is traffic flowing on that? And has it had any impact whatsoever on the free roads?
Yes, it's had a huge impact on there. There was one free, basically one highway that went up and down Western Wake County, and that was during rush hour. That came to a standstill every day, going both directions. That has ended. The Triangle Expressway is very much a commuter road. It's busy in the mornings and in the afternoons and evenings. Other times, not so much. I mean, it's six lanes wide. Sometimes you look at it, you know, in the middle of the day, and there's hardly anybody on it. But it has made a huge difference on the NC-55, which was the, you know, basically a suburban route, lots of traffic lights and shopping centers along it. It is not nearly as clogged as it used to be.
So, David Borax, our lanes are going to be one lane in each direction on I-77. Is that correct?
Two toll lanes from Charlotte up to Huntersville or up to Cornelius, and then one lane from there on up to Mooresville.
Won't that cause a bottleneck as the two lanes become one?
Most likely.
Because it's what happens now on the free lanes.
Although the number of cars goes down. But the reason for that is not a design or engineering reason. It's because there are causeways across Lake Norman there in Davidson and Cornelius that cannot practically be widened without a massive project and environmental studies.
Okay. And David Wickard in Atlanta, have they been able to follow through? I know you have reversible lanes, two going out of town, two coming into town, depending upon the time of day. Have they been able to follow through on their promise to deliver 45-mile-per-hour traffic?
So far, yeah. I mean, I will say the I-75 lanes that opened last January, those are more lightly traveled than, say, the I-85 corridor where those lanes opened in 2011. Those lanes are not reversible. There's one in each direction on I-85. The idea behind the tolls is they raise them until enough people don't use the lanes. That's how they keep traffic moving at 45 miles per hour.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because the project here has dynamic pricing. Your lanes on, I think it's I-75, correct? Your lanes...
85 and 75.
Okay,
yeah.
Your lanes also have dynamic pricing. Can you, if the price goes up while you're on in the lane, I'm told there are signs that will tell you what the current price is, how easily can you get off?
You can get off at specific locations, you know, about every couple of miles. So you could get off.
Is the same true on I-77? Is it going to be true on I-77?
There are a limited number of spots you can get in and out of those toll
lanes. So if you get on and it's price X, and suddenly while you're driving on it, it becomes price Y plus Y squared.
I don't know the answer to this. I'm thinking to myself out loud right now. When you get in the lane, you are given a price. I think that would stick with you for your commute, okay. But I'm not sure.
All right. And is dynamic pricing in play in Raleigh?
No, not at all. It's just one price. It's based on the mile, and it's a pretty high-tech system. It has gantries over the entry ramps, and you can buy a transponder, a NC Quick Pass. You can put on your windshield, and you know, put money in your account, and it automatically deducts that as you go along, and you get a discount if you have the transponder. If you don't have a transponder, it reads your license plate. As you're getting on the freeway, and then reads it again as you get off, and they'll send you a bill.
But it's not a discounted bill. It's a full fare bill, right?
It's a full fare bill. So, I mean, if you went the full length of the freeway, the 17 or so miles, it would be $4.97.
How can they do it for $4.90? We're talking about, what, $19, $20?
Well, that's what the original estimates were. I want to say one thing about – go ahead.
In past shows on this – no one has been able to even give us an inkling of what this thing is going to cost to use.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that study that came up with those numbers was a preliminary study in 2014 or something.
By now, why don't they know what the price is?
I think they're starting to think about it. There are going to be some public hearings later this year before that the road opens, and they'll have to start talking about what those are going to be. There's been some talk about an introductory rate for the first 6 months or a year or something. Uh-huh. We just don't know what they're going to do yet.
So the Monroe toll road will use transponders. They'll use the same transponder, I believe, that they use in Raleigh. Is that correct?
Yes. So it's all done through the North Carolina Turnpike Authority, which has been around since 2002. You'll be able to get a Quick Pass transponder, which is the state program, and that's free. Uh-huh. And that would also work in Florida and Georgia. Then you could also get an Easy Pass, which is the one people are familiar with for roads up and down the East Coast. That costs $7.40. But on the Monroe Expressway, it's a set rate, so you'll know exactly what you're going to pay.
Okay, we'll talk more about that when we come back with David Borax and others here on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about toll roads here in Raleigh and Atlanta with David Borax, who's our reporter here in our Spirit Square studio from WFAE News. Richard Stradling is the transportation reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. And David Wickard is transportation reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We were talking about transponders on the Monroe Expressway. They're giving those away, is that right?
Yeah, this is in North Carolina and all the toll roads and toll lane projects. And so
if you have one, you get to ride cheaper.
You get to ride for the published fee.
Okay.
If you don't have one, they'll take a photo of your license plate, they'll send you a bill by mail, and you'll pay about 35% more in North Carolina.
Now, the I-77 toll lanes are not using.
They're using the same setup.
They're using a transponder.
Yes. Yep.
And the same is true. If you don't have one, you'll get charged more than the posted fee. In an article, David Wickard, that you wrote about your lanes, I think on I-75 last year, you quoted Georgia Department of Transportation commissioners as saying that this road is a glimpse of the future. But you went on to say that not everybody likes the future, in part because there are fears that the lanes will enable customers to bypass hotels and restaurants and other businesses. How so, and have those fears proven to be justified?
I think there's still anxiety among business owners along the highway. I'll be honest, I don't have stats that would say one way or another. But once you're in the lanes, there's no getting out of them except at the designated places, and every exit doesn't have an exit ramp. Now, I think that if you were interested in staying at a hotel at a specific exit, presumably you would get off the express lanes before then. But in terms of making a snap decision, oh, I'll get off at this exit and get at this hotel, you're probably not going to be able to do that.
Is the same going to be true here? You can't get off at certain exits?
Yeah, the ingress and egress points are going to be at places where you'll have to plan ahead.
Okay, so that brings up this. What's that going to do to the surface roads, particularly up in the northern part of Mecklenburg County, where those roads are already crowded? So if you can't get off, and you have to either get off and go through the slower traffic, or you have to get off and double back to where your house is, what does that do to the surface roads?
I think it may increase traffic if people are trying to avoid the tolls. And, you know, another point to make here about I-77.
Well, just to get off and go home, because if you can't get off at your exit, then you have to double back or get off sooner.
Yeah, there people will be doing all kinds of tricks, Mike. But another point to make here is that, you know, we have Lake Norman there at the northern end of this toll lane project. And Lake Norman is a barrier that you can't build another road. You know, there can't be alternate routes. There are very few alternate routes. We have basically only a couple of routes, and those are already busy every day at rush hour.
Has that happened in Atlanta, David? Has it caused the surface streets to increase congestion?
I don't think so necessarily. I will say this, that people use the surface streets anyway. I mean, we've got corridors that are so congested, interstates that are so congested, that people have kind of given up on them and are using some of the secondary roads. That's actually an argument that, say the Georgia Department of Transportation makes for why, you know, they can't just keep building more interstate lanes to address traffic. They say that the people are using these secondary lanes, and if we open up, say, a new free lane on I-75, as soon as you open it up, it will be filled from all the people who then get off who were using the other road.
Has there been any talk about expanding MARTA, the rail version of MARTA, out to other places that it doesn't go to right now?
Yes, there's always talk of that. In fact, Gwinnett County, where I happen to live, northeast of the city, is talking about a rail extension of MARTA just a little bit into the county. It's actually a big deal because Gwinnett County and a lot of the suburban counties in Atlanta have resisted MARTA for decades. But traffic is getting so bad that people are giving it a second look.
Well, that's a familiar story, David.
Well, on the subject of rail, I think, the congestion on I-77 right now and the prospect of these toll lanes does raise the question about should we really take a harder look at the Red Line commuter rail from Charlotte to Mooresville. I think this project will probably end up being an argument for it. We've talked on this program before about all the barriers to that and the unwillingness of the current owner of the tracks to the Lake Norman area for using it. But there is a divide in the community out there that is opposed to the toll lane project among people who are also opposed to the commuter rail and some who think this is the answer.
Richard, over the 7 years of operation of the Triangle Expressway?
Triangle Expressway, yeah.
Have the tolls fluctuated? Has the price changed substantially over those 7 years?
Yes, it goes up, and it goes up on a regular, something that was approved back in 2008, even before the road started. There's a schedule of toll rate increases that, were all kind of built in so they could pay off the bonds that were floated to build the highway. So every January 1st or so, they go up a little bit, 3% or so. And you can look on their website and see what it's going to cost in 3 years and in 6 years and so forth. And those sort of peter out after a while.
Okay. And in Georgia, I believe your toll lanes were built by the state. Is that correct, David Wicker?
Yes.
How about the pricing there?
The tolls range anywhere from 10 cents a mile to 90 cents a mile. And again, depending on the traffic, depending on the time of day, what's interesting is that that may not be high enough to guarantee that 45 miles per hour on I-85, which is a very busy corridor coming into the city. At times, they're having a hard time guaranteeing that 45 miles per hour because even at 90 cents, enough people are willing to pay it that those lanes are moving slower than they'd like.
And, we can look at the example of Washington, D.C., where, headlines in the newspapers last year were about $40 tolls and higher.
Yeah.
And there's no barriers to raising
are
that.
Are there? Well, I was going to ask, are there any barriers, anything in the contract between Cintra and the state of North Carolina?
No, I mean, it's the definition of dynamic tolling. Dynamic pricing is you can't put a limit on it. Because
but there's a base price at the moment. There will be when they start this, there will be a base price.
There
is
will
there
be.
Anything to say in 6 months that the base price doesn't go up 50%?
You know, I think they may start out with something that's on the low side to get people to start using them, but I would expect, just listening to the description about how the prices have gone up on the I-540, I think the same thing will happen here.
What has happened in other parts of the country where Cintra has put in or operated these toll lanes and then gone bankrupt?
We know. Probably. I mean, you know, first of all, they haven't gone bankrupt on every project. I think there's a little bit of misinformation out there. But they have gone bankrupt on a handful of high-profile projects. Now, some of them were toll roads. They weren't toll lane projects like we have here, so that's not really comparable. But in some cases, there has been a lack of users that has, you know, or let's put it this way. The rosy usership projections did not pan out, and that caused financial problems. And for the folks who are opposed to the toll lane here, they are predicting that here.
Aaron emails, depending on the cost of the variable pricing, is it true that we would need the toll traffic equal to L.A. to make it profitable? Is it also true that Cintra retains property rights over the land in between the roads?
First of all, Cintra doesn't own anything. All of the road and the land around it are all still owned by the North Carolina Department of Transportation. So let's get that one out of the way. As for the
The amount of traffic.
I mean, we mentioned Kurt Noss earlier. He's done some research on this, and he points out that in many large cities, much bigger than Charlotte, you know, they haven't had the revenues that Cintra is projecting on this toll road. So the quick answer to that is that we're probably not going to have anywhere near the traffic that they have, and we're not going to meet those projections.
Brent wants to know, will public transit buses be allowed in the toll lanes?
Yes. So let's talk about that. The toll lanes will be open for free to anybody who has at least three people in the car, unless they decide to change that through this process we talked about. Public transit buses will be in that lane. You can take that. And if you're a bus commuter right now, I've talked to folks who do that. They're looking forward to this because it means that their bus commute is going to get much shorter. Motorcycles will be allowed in this lane. I think that's pretty much it. Now, they're also talking about whether to make allowances for perhaps handicapped vehicles or something. But anyway.
What's the situation in Atlanta? Do you allow MARTA buses in the toll lanes?
Yes, in fact, we have regional express commuter buses. And that's actually a part of the appeal of these lanes for suburban counties that have traditionally resisted rail transit. A lot of the suburbs are now looking at bus rapid transit, which is sort of like light rail on tires. You know, there are transit stations, limited stops. You know, the buses will start in the suburbs and go downtown or wherever they need to go. But those will travel in these lanes, and that has sparked real interest in mass transit in the suburbs. Mm. It's not rail, it's buses, and it's a lot cheaper.
So what I'm hearing you say, David, is that there's not this resistance to riding the bus in Atlanta. There seems to be some resistance to it here.
I wouldn't go that far. I think that for the politicians in the suburbs, it is more appealing because it costs less. And there are some people who will never ride express buses or local buses. In fact, you know, probably the overwhelming majority of people won't. But there doesn't seem to be the visceral reaction against express buses that there has been in the past against rail transit.
People in Charlotte, at least before the Blue Line opened, saw the Blue Line rail as a boondoggle, and no one would ride it. And it's not turned out to be true, and it's in fact turned out to be a great development tool, which is why they extended it and why they're looking at other different color lines to go to other places. What about Raleigh? Do people ride the bus in Raleigh? What's your transportation system like up there? If it was more robust and included rail, would it have any impact on your traffic?
Well, we have we're a three-city region,
right?
So we actually have four bus systems. We have the city of Raleigh has a system. Mm-hmm. the city of Durham, Chapel Hill has its own system. Actually, Cary, 150,000 person suburb, has its own system. And then there's a regional system that runs sort of express buses between everybody. The express buses, I think, do pretty well during commuting hours, and you'll see those full going from Chapel Hill to Raleigh or Durham to Raleigh and vice versa. Local buses are hit or miss. I mean, some of them are very busy. I know the Go Raleigh buses, some of the lines are very busy and others are less so. We're planning a bus rapid transit system here. They're just starting to hold some meetings in the coming weeks to talk about how that will work. Voters here passed a half-cent sales tax increase a year and a half ago, to pay for transit improvements. And they've started with some improvements to the bus system, but next is this bus rapid transit idea, which is dedicated lanes. It's a little like a light rail system, but with buses, dedicated lanes for the buses and station platform kind of things. That'll be our next step toward transit here. And then the longer term is to have some sort of commuter rail system between here and Durham.
Is there any significant opposition to any of that? In Charlotte, before the blue line came in, people said, "Don't waste money on fixed rail, fixed position rail that you have to. That it's going to be locked in for 100 years. Just widen the roads."
Right. Well, we tried a fixed rail system, a decade or so ago. We had an earlier plan that was going to put commuter trains on tracks next to an existing freight train track that goes from Raleigh to Durham, and that fell apart, and so the regions has kind of split on this. So Chapel Hill and Durham are going ahead with development of a light rail system that will connect Chapel Hill with Durham, and then we're, as I say, the Wake County side is going ahead with the bus rapid transit with rail as a kind of a future consideration.
Donald emails from Texas. I guess they're listening to us in Texas this morning. We love the many, many toll roads here in Dallas-Fort Worth. They are lightly used, and one can drive the posted 70 to 75 mile per hour speed limit without obstruction. However, the adjacent highways remain packed at rush hours, so people aren't using them as expected. They seem to be a money-raising endeavor, just as in Charlotte, rather than a means to reduce overall traffic. What will the speed limit be on these toll lanes on I-77? They're guaranteeing 45 miles per hour, but will it be a higher posted speed limit than the adjacent road?
I think the posted speed limit will be the same in both sides.
But why? I'm paying to use it. Why can't I do 90?
I think what they're saying is you won't be going 10 miles an hour. You'll be going 45.
Okay.
So I'm very interested to hear the experience of the other toll roads on that.
Okay. You want to chime in here, David or Richard?
Well, we're ours. I think ours is probably a little like the Texas one. You can go 70 miles an hour on that road, and the traffic is light enough that you can still go 70 miles an hour. And I do think local trips, people are staying on the side road, and it's still crowded during rush hour. I shouldn't say it's wide open or anything, but that's partly because people are going from their subdivision to a high school down the road or whatever, and it's more local traffic. But it's up to people. I mean, if you want to pay that extra money, you can avoid all of that. So I don't think people are complaining as much about the traffic as they used to.
And that's another point here. They describe it as a choice as opposed to something that's required.
Joseph on Facebook writes, "The toll lane idea doesn't alleviate congestion. It just pushes those who can't afford to pay on the non-highway roads, causing congestion there." David, very quickly, as recently as last month, there were hopes that the toll lanes would never go into operation. Is that a pipe dream, or is there enough pressure to make that politically viable?
We're waiting for the DOT to make a decision, and this committee that's meets Monday, and then we'll expect a decision by the end of the year from the DOT and Governor Cooper.
David Borax, reporter for WFAE News, also joining us today, Richard Stradling, reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. Thank you for your perspective. And David Wickard, transportation reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, where these toll lanes have made traffic completely disappear around the Atlanta area.
That's a good one, Mike.
Thank you all for the hour. I appreciate it.